Well, welcome. And again, let's just think in terms of aging with boldness, launching into the third age. And that's what we're going to be working on as we come together. A little bit about my background. Somebody said this morning, are you qualified to talk on this? Are you old enough? It depends on who you talk to. When I'm teaching at the university, I would have students pop into my office. They would just open the door, and they would say, you're old. And then they would shut the door and leave. And that just became a campus joke, all right? And so I had people popping in and out all day telling me I'm old. Well, now I work at an elder care center, and I'm called that nice young man. Which place do you think I like working at better? I'm going to be 70 next month, and so you're either going to go, wow, he's still functioning, or you're going to say, oh, nice young man. So whatever works for you and floats your boat. I have, in my adult life, served in parish ministry in the Missouri Synod where I was then. I was called the Director of Christian Education, which is lifelong faith formation. And I spent most of my time working with youth and young adults. Well, in doing that, I learned that I was sending those kids home. And the primary people to work with youth and young adults are parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles. And so when I was told I needed to get a doctoral degree to keep my job, that's an incentive in case you wanted to know, because I got a call to teach at Concordia University in St. Paul, I got my doctorate in adult education with an emphasis in gerontology because I wanted to learn how to teach adults more effectively to work with their kids at home. And doing that, I mean, back in the 70s, I trained volunteers to work in inner city nursing homes. So I've always had a passion for older people. And that just kind of continues now. My chaplaincy is only about 10 hours a week, 10 to 12 hours a week. But it's enough to, and I volunteer with a group called Little Brothers, Friends of the Elderly, which serves women as well as men and is not a monastic order, it's non-sectarian, but our mission is to stamp out loneliness for seniors because that's becoming a chronic problem. So that's a little bit about me. I've had an interesting life history, which we'll talk more about, but I was widowed at 32, divorced in somewhere in my 60s with my second marriage, so I checked the box that says single because it's not their business, right? That's just my attitude. The other thing I changed, just so you get to know my personality, I went to this marvelous display at the Science Museum in St. Paul, and it was all about the human race. And that's where I learned there really is only one race. The rest are gradations of color or nationality or culture. So now on the forms, when I check other and write in human, it threw off the ELCA people. They called me and said, okay, we need something more specific. I said, okay, we don't want to upset the bishop. So anyway, 5 years ago, I did leave the Missouri Synod and became a part of ELCA. So I left the roster of Missouri and became on the roster of ELCA. And that is just not all that significant, but at least it gives you my tribal affiliation. How many Lutherans do we have in here? Is everybody Lutheran? If we're not Lutheran, what are we?
Human.
All right, because there's nothing about this that's human. Well, no, it's Christian, not Lutheran. Anyway, I also have to be careful, because I'm a spiritual director also, and I help teach people to become spiritual directors. And I have this, does anybody see the movie Up?
Yes.
I love that movie.
Me too.
It's about the aging process. And there's a dog in there. And I'm the dog. I'm always chasing squirrels. And so my mind is somewhat random, and I have to be careful because I'll start chasing a squirrel, and you go, where did he just go? But I do come back. But you may have to remind me where I was. All right, so that's just a little bit of an intro. We are going to be exploring different aspects of aging. But before I do that, I want to know more about who you are. And this is going to be an interesting process. Some of you are more succinct than others, but I'm going to ask that you really practice your succinctness today, because it's important that we hear from each other. So when we go into this activity, when it's time to kind of check in petite, okay? Not grande. What we're going to do, I've got all these cards up here. So all of you who are using this as a coffee holder and other things, I'm going to ask you to remove your coffee cups, but then, well, no, just work around their coffee cups. Don't spit on them, that's gross. But those of you sitting in the front row, when we start doing this, could you just push your chair back a little bit? What I'm going to invite you to do, and notice it's an invitation, not a requirement, is to come around and look at these cards and pick one that really expresses your thinking about the aging process. Okay? Now, if you want a card that somebody has picked up, please do not get into a fist fight. It's okay, you can share. It's everything we need to know we learned in kindergarten. And so we're going to do sharing if you want to both use the same card. So pick a card, and then I'm going to ask you briefly then to say your name and where you're from and hold up your card and say, this is why I chose this card. You hear the word? Briefly. Okay? Here we go. Come up and pick a card, any card, that expresses something that you think about aging. All right. Dun, 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 dun. All right. I chose this card. It says, Dare to Dream. Truly, I do not pick it every time. But ever since I was in college, my students now call it a cheesy song. They just don't know what they're talking about. But I love the song To Dream the Impossible Dream. And I promised myself in my 20s I was going to live the dream. And I want to keep doing that until the last breath. And then I'll really be in the dream heaven, which I love. All right. That was fairly succinct for me. I'm not going to be able to keep track. You do not have to do it. Only if you want to. So just say pass if you want to pass. No judgment, okay? Now that's everybody, right? All right, super. If you want to pass them this way, that would be helpful. Well, you don't have to stack them. It's just that way they're all up here and I can stack them later. I think this is a fun way of helping people kind of get at their attitude and name what it is they're heading toward. Let's just get something out of in here. First of all, aging begins at conception. Everybody is aging from the moment of conception. So we get this idea, if you say aging, that we're talking only about 90-year-olds. No, we're talking about 90-minute-year-olds, because everybody begins aging at conception. So when we talk about aging successfully, or aging with wholeness and wellness, that's every stage of life. Every stage of life. So a lot of what we're going to be talking about is not new if you're 50 and older. But somebody asked me, who's your target audience? Pretty much for while we're here, I'm looking at the third of life. The first third is growing up, preparing, getting educated. The second third is doing, raising family, doing your career, all that kind of stuff. And then when the kids start leaving home, or when you get to 50, 55, and start looking at a different career or retiring, that becomes the third. Now, in our generation, in our culture today, somebody 55 has a good 30, even 40 years left. Good heavens, that's a long time. And you either go through whining or you go through whooping, you know? and so we want to, but again, things happen. I mean, I used to walk miles in a day. Now I'm trying to get back to 2 miles a day. Things happen, but you don't just sit down. Well, let me show you some things we're going to look at here. Tell me about that word. What is it?
Ism.
What is it?
Prejudice.
Anything.
Assumptions.
Assumptions.
Prejudices.
What are some words with ism?
Pessimism.
Optimism.
Optimism.
Fundamentalism.
Communism.
We're good.
I'm always good.
Well, I know you're good, but I mean, is it working?
Yes. Right now it is because Lila.
Okay.
Kirsten. Right?
Kirsten. Who somebody figured it out.
Okay, perfect.
It will fall back asleep on you.
Oh.
Not right now, but it will.
It cannot. All right, so. I won't permit it. Alcoholism.
Yes.
Workaholism. Socialism. Communism. What's the one we...
about pessimism.
Professionalism.
Fanaticism.
What's our economic system?
Capitalism.
Yeah. Ism is a way of life. It describes a way in which we look at life. So a capital person in capitalism is going to look at how money works for you. Socialism is going to work how society works for you. Get the idea? Lutheranism or non-sectarianism are a way of thinking, a way of life. So when we see this ism, we want to think of the letters standing for something else. I is for identity. Where do I find my identity? Security. Where do I find my security? What makes me feel safe? Where do I go if I'm feeling threatened? What brings me a sense of security? And M is for meaning. Where do I find my meaning in life? Which is really expressed in our vocation. How we live out who we are. But ism becomes the core of what we're looking at here. Where in every stage of life do I find my identity, my security, and my meaning? Now this is something our whole time together, I'm going to be inviting you to reflect. Did you notice how different every person is in this room? The older we get, the more different we become from others. How many of you were widowed at 32? See, I mean, all right, so that makes me totally different than the rest of you. How many of you have been to Germany? Okay, that means you're filled with wisdom. Kidding. But you get the idea? We have different life experiences, we have different journeys, we've had different relationship issues, and everyone, we've met different people, and that makes each one of us extremely different. Somebody who's worked with the homeless your entire life gives you life experience that none of us probably can relate to, because you've walked a unique journey. But that's going to be true for every person in this room. So I'm inviting you, where you are in your journey of life, to think about what feeds your identity. What feeds your security? What feeds your meaning? I was doing a devotion at a nursing home last week, and two ladies stayed after and they were talking. And this is basically a hospice-style nursing home. And the one was saying she was ready to die. She was telling this to her friend, and I'm not afraid of death, and going through that whole discussion. And her friend that she was talking to responded by saying, "Well, I'm not afraid of death, but I don't want to leave bills behind and living here, da-da-da-da-da-da." And so her identity, security, and meaning was challenged by the economic realities that she was going through. My mother-in-law was terrified of dying in a way that would embarrass her. So we each have our different things that feed our ism. What is your identity? What is your security? And how do you find meaning for your life? And that changes. I mean, some of it transcends the whole life journey, but it also changes in different chapters of life. When I left teaching the university and started working in memory care as a chaplain, my friend said to me, "Well, does it make you feel bad that you wasted all those years not doing what you wanted to do?" And I said, "I think you're missing the entire point here. It's about chapters in life. And I'm moving into a new chapter, and that's perfectly okay. It doesn't mean I didn't like my old chapter. I loved it." All right, let's look at the lifespan. And this, I think, will help you see a little bit about where we're going. Assuming I can make it work. There is your life. Isn't that nice? And it begins in childhood or at birth. And the function that we see at that stage of life is total dependence. I mean, we know a child newly born cannot survive without people caring for it, taking care of all of its needs. Totally, completely dependent. Now, as a child grows older, you know that they move from dependence until about age 2 when they learn to say no. Right? And that begins a process, and it's manifested mainly in adolescence, of independence. I'm going to do what I want to do when I want to do it. I'm still in that stage. But we move to independence, which is a rough time of life for parents, for kids. But if they don't move into that independence, they are emotionally crippled the rest of their life. When we talk about adulthood, some people want to take and keep the word independence. The definition I work with of adulthood says no. To stay at independence is locking yourself into emotional immaturity. To move into adulthood, we talk about interdependence, being able to play well with others. And so if we move into adulthood, we're learning how to live in relationship with other people where I have boundaries, but I recognize that other people do too. And so we walk together in journey, which is something, in case you haven't noticed, our country is having a little trouble with right now. Because we're staying in total independence, an adolescent country, but that's another topic. Right? Now, here's the reality. There's no clear markers. You know, we used to say 12 or 13, you move into adolescence. Well, I have a granddaughter that moved into adolescence at 10, okay? She became independent. And we used to say, I mean, even I went to college at 18. I got married before I got out of college, so at age 21. But now, I mean, and I moved out of the house at 18. Now, many of you might share stories that young people are not leaving home till even age 30. So adolescence, in a way, has been postponed. And that's just a cultural phenomenon that we have going on. I was in Italy a couple years ago, and the men there explained to me that until they get married, they literally stay home so mom can take care of them. And that's just the way it's done. I thought, where's that in my life? And then somewhere in the 30s, we invented this thing called retirement that never existed before. At age 65, you know why they picked 65? Because that was the lifespan. People were dying at 65. They never had expected to have to pay a lot of money out. But they said 65 was the retirement age. Well, now, you know, it's up to what, 66, I think.
67
to get full. But it's a meaningless number. I mean, people get mad at me. They're saying, you retired. Well, yeah, four times. What's your point? I retired from this. I did not retire from life. So we have all sorts of definitions for us to work with. What does retirement even begin to mean? Well, now, if a person, and the way it goes now, if a person lives till 80, there's a very good chance that they're going to spend, about 80% of them will spend at least 2 years being totally back at dependence. And I work with these folks on a daily basis. What we try to do, and when we look at holistic aging, we want to maintain interdependence as long as we can. How do we help people stay interdependent rather than dependent? Thoughts? Have you ever thought about this?
What I think is really fascinating there is we too often, I've worked in the disability community, and we in American culture, we talk about independence all the time. And when I've worked in it internationally, independence doesn't resonate very well in a lot of other parts of the world. And interdependence, or being, like, I want to be a part of things. I don't, you know, sometimes we talk to parents and say, we want to help your kid become independent. And they're like, we don't want him to be independent. We want him to be part of what we do every day. And that interdependence, I think, is a much more helpful word to insert into the conversation.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is more mature. Mm-hmm. Valuing the independence of the person, but valuing their ability, again, to play well with others. Mm-hmm. And what we have a tendency to do in our country, and I think we're getting a little better, it used to be special education, for example, was in another room, maybe in another building. And now we have mainstreamed the children into the classroom, which helps people realize we're a whole community. We're not a segmented, isolated. Well, with seniors, I mean, my heart just goes out to the people in my memory care units. I have trouble getting pastors to come in because they're terrified. And so I train people. I trained all the Eucharistic ministers at one of the Catholic churches on how to give Eucharist to a person who's in deep Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Because the conviction was, if they don't understand, then they shouldn't have it. No. It's God's action, not their cognition. But to get people over that hump, because we tend to isolate people and label and categorize. There's this great thing in the Netherlands where they have built actual communities with little stores and they're walled communities, but the residents there can just kind of lead a so-called normal life in their walled community. And it's just, they're not isolated. People come in and out. And anyway, so that's another time. But keep this in mind, when we talk about wholeness in aging, we're talking about maintaining interdependence as long as we can. But now here's the other thing. Even the people in my memory care unit, and this bothers people, have a right to vote. You don't take away a person's adulthood. And how do you respect that adulthood as they move towards dependence again? Those are some ethical decisions that have to be made as we work with people. But again, in holistic aging, we want to do everything we can to maintain the independence and the integrity of the individual, no matter what stage of life they're in. Yes.
I'm curious. We have healthcare proxies, and we've got power of attorneys. Do we have political proxies?
No. My residents kept asking me who should they vote for.
Sorry.
So I said Franklin Roosevelt. I mean, because they don't have proxies, and so many of them will kind of remember maybe they're a Democrat or maybe they're a Republican.
Yeah.
But I would not answer that question. Because that's really unethical. But no, we don't have.
No, I mean
that.
If we could choose a proxy.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think legally we have a.
I don't think we do.
Have a way to do that. But you know, they can refuse medications, as you know. They can refuse activities. All you can do is encourage. But there's a reason for that, and that's part of holistic aging, helping people live out their life to the fullest. And that has been a lifelong mission for me, regardless of age, whether it's an elementary kid or a 99-year-old Alzheimer person, live it to the fullest.
Mm-hmm.
And each person has a right to that dignity. How do we do it holistically and meaningfully is the question. And folks, any of us in here over 65 are part of what's, we're the 11% of the world. And by the year 2025, we will make up probably 20 to 25% of the world. The United States and Western society is facing what many call, well, you know this, a gray tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
It is coming at us in a huge way. Historically, 5% of the population has been institutionalized in a nursing home or assisted living, you know, that kind of thing. With the boomers coming through, let's just keep it at 5%. That population group is so large, we need to triple and in some places quadruple the number of beds. We are not prepared. And it's just important to keep that in mind, which is why I get kind of passionate. My daughter is a mental health intake person for a local hospital. Then it happens to be the hospital where we send our psych residents from assisted living. And so she and I end up working with some of the same people. But she's had people in emergency room 4 and 5 days or longer because Minnesota has such a shortage of beds for Jerry Psych. And, as you can tell us, there's a shortage of gerontological workers. So, things to think about as we look at wholeness. So, isn't that depressing? Actually, I think it gives us lots of opportunities. All right, here we go again. Let's see if I can do this.
Are you changing or just staying in
the... I'm going to a different... So, I go to Finder.
Yep.
Now, as we do this... Keep in mind ism. What are the isms in what you're about to see?
Still calling.
Song. One of the life enrichment people taught my memory care unit to sing that when I turned 64. I lost it big time. Just like last week, my memory care unit learned sign language for Jesus Loves Me. And you know, whenever you can teach something new, that's kind of odd and fun. So what you see in there is ism. Identity, security, meaning. What is it? Well, this poetry by the Beatles. What does it bring forth?
A new word. Supportism.
Supportism. Say
yes.
More.
It's just, you know, identifying that supportive, meaningful circle that is going to be with you throughout your life.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Others. What'd you see? Identity, security. I think the title, Will You Still Love Me?
Mm-hmm.
What does that reflect?
Fear.
Fear.
Yeah.
Fear of what?
Loneliness.
Loneliness. Number one health issue for seniors in the United States. Number one. Because the mental condition causes the physical condition.
Mm-hmm.
Loneliness, huge fear. Come on, has anybody caught themselves looking in the mirror at wrinkles? Huh? Going, oh, how do I hide this one? Right?
Well, it's a losing proposition, so.
Yeah. you're done with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I am a chronologically gifted person of substance who is follically challenged.
What? Who has what challenge?
Follically.
Yes.
No hair.
Oh,
follically freed.
There you go, follically free, yeah. But my mullet won't work anymore, you know? So, but as I change physically, will I still have my identity? I cannot open jars because of I have no cartilage in either thumb. Does a real man ask a woman sitting next to him to open his water bottle for him?
Yes.
Is that an identity question? Yeah. Yeah. Or when you discover as a female that you can't make your favorite cake anymore because it's just too exhausting. Or you say to the kids, I cannot handle having Thanksgiving dinner again this year. Those are identity issues. How do I maintain who I am while giving up? I mean, you're over here knitting. I have so many residents who say, oh, I used to love knitting. but I can't hold the needles anymore. You see where that identity, security, and meaning? And then at retirement, and it used to be almost exclusively men, because women, as we know, never retire, because they still have to cook, clean, in the minds of some people, not my own. But men would retire and then die. They didn't have an identity anymore. They didn't know what to do with themselves. I think that's changing. But identity, security, meaning. Anything else you saw in there?
Loss of mobility. Just the
mobility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
I saw my mother in there, and I'm finding that I'm not being able to do things as my mother wasn't able to as she aged.
Yeah. Hmm. As Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you? Yeah. Yes.
I still see romance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah.
Romance.
Well,
that is special, except for those of us who are single, you know. And
I'm not
belittling what you're saying, but it's a tension as people age. Those who are single have one way to look at it, and those who are blissfully married, wow, what a gift. I always thought I was going to live on Golden Pond. You know, I still watch that movie once a year. If I need a good cry, that's where I go. But you're talking about that on Golden Pond, that intimacy, that touch. Seniors, you know, nobody wants to touch them. And hand massages and all that kind of stuff is so important. Yeah. Thank you.
I remember as a child, I used to love to touch my grandma's arm because I thought it felt like lips up.
I kind of wonder more about why someone would be excited about touching Lefse.
It was a connection because she made Lefse.
So funny. You know,
sure, yeah.
Like, it kind of just bumply, rumply, I don't know, potatoes.
You know, after my mother-in-law died, my one daughter would fight to sit in grandma's chair.
Oh, yeah.
Because she said, I can smell grandma.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a good enough sense of smell, but it's that same kind of thing, the touch, the, you know. Yes.
On that note, just the fact that you asked us what did we see, but also it's just hearing the song and the role of music and our other senses besides language, or our other ways of connecting besides language, because I feel like I think we need a level of creativity in connecting with one another, and music is a beautiful way to do that.
And music stays with people to the very end. As a chaplain, one of the things I became aware of as a person is in their last hours, you know, do we play music?
Yes.
And if we play music, what kind of music do we play?
Mm-hmm.
And as I thought about that and went through that, I've informed my children, if you play country western music while I'm dying,
I'm coming back.
I will find a way to haunt you into eternity. Okay? That's just my own thing. Yeah, because music is such a powerful communicator. And bringing out emotions.
I visit a lot of our older folks, and one of the things that doesn't disappear from them, you can say the Lord's Prayer, and they'll so often join right in every single word. So that is another thing that's just there.
Well, I'm going to pick up on that for a second. I do this workshop with people who do children, youth, and family ministry, and I go through this whole thing on that point exactly. If you don't do your job, I'm not able to do mine. I cannot teach Jesus loves me in the memory care unit, but every one of my residents, regardless of denomination, sings that with me every week. Because it's deeply embedded. And that's even Bible verses. I have certain Bible verses. The whole group can say John 3:16 with me. But not because I taught it, but because it was already there. If we don't do our jobs with children and youth, it's going to be a real hard deal for somebody as a chaplain when they're older. So, thank you. Yeah. Yes?
I love the picture at the end where the older couple were walking by the lake.
Yeah.
And they walked with their backs to it. They were walking forward. There's always a forward until there isn't.
Yes. Say that louder. That should be a slogan. Mm-hmm.
There's always a forward until there isn't.
And let me ask you this philosophically. Is there ever and
there's
isn't?
There's always a forward until there isn't.
I mean, on this side of life, I suppose there is an isn't. But for Christians, there's really never an isn't.
But, yeah.
It's a change of address.
We've had two seniors recently who have died of one pancreatic cancer and the other of just, it was his time.
Yeah.
And both had said, I'm not afraid. And they were, you know, strong Christians. But that was important for them to say, I'm not afraid.
Yeah. Important for them or for their loved ones?
All of us.
Probably all of us.
Yeah.
And there was another man who had a stroke at age 32. He can't talk. In fact, at that point, he couldn't talk, couldn't move. But his fiance was there. It was her birthday, and he could sing Happy Birthday.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He couldn't talk, but he could sing that.
Yeah. Wow.
So what portion of the brain did that come from?
Isn't it part back here? It's real embedded almost so deeply.
Yeah, from a first birthday party you ever had? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it just, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, repetition is the most important form of education. Mm-hmm. And so when I don't want to go into my children, youth, and family workshop thing, but to repeat those songs, and this is, I'll get in trouble here, this is why the liturgy of the week sometimes kind of bothers me, because it disenfranchises children, and it disenfranchises senior. When the old green hymnal came out, anybody remember the old green hymnal?
Yeah.
My grandmother was left out. She was sight impaired. And even the large print was hard for her. And so the church started a special service each week from the old hymnal so that the seniors could participate. These things we don't think about. We were remodeling our church, and I became a real pain in the posterior. Because our pastor, who was a decorator, she had all these ideas. And
colorizing the work.
Which is fine, but you don't have chairs without arms. Seniors have trouble getting out of chairs without arms. You don't have throw rugs scattered on wood floors. Let's get real here. So anyway, she didn't speak to me for a long time, but somebody had to speak up on behalf of seniors. And especially, and then they came up with this idea. Don't I sound crotchety? But you know these stand-up tables that are, you know, like cocktail parties?
Yeah.
Let's fill the narthex with those and have coffee in the narthex. Yeah. Well, get a senior through that maze. I wrote, you know, and people got mad at me, but I said, well, we're for the young people. I said, we're paying the bill. I said that. I almost said that. They're just, somebody has to say something. It's kind of hard. Well, okay. Take one down and pass it around. 99 sheets of paper on the wall or whatever. All right, what we're going to use is kind of our guide for talking about this. This was developed by an inter-Lutheran commission on wellness. Yes.
You notice how big the print is under.
Oh, you're not supposed to have that.
No, well.
Oh no, yes you are. Yeah. No, I know, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I didn't do that. I took it off the web and I should have found a way to expand it. It's a prayer.
Oh, is it? This is a prayer?
That's awful.
Yeah, it is.
Now I'm embarrassed. I yell at people for that.
Chairs with no arms.
Yeah, don't tell me to pass it. I'll get some more made up and I'll have it expanded. Okay?
Thank you.
Because, yeah, this is on the ELCA website and is designed to be a bookmark. And,
sure, then it would make sense. But.
And I was trying to find a way. There's no way to keep that alive, huh? There we go. Whoops.
No, do you use the remote? It's the remote. It's the projector that's going to sleep for some rapid action reason.
So a computer?
Yeah.
Ah.
Oh, now I can read. Awesome.
That cute little box. I wonder what that is.
That escape.
Yeah. All right. So this was developed by the Inter-Lutheran Commission on Wellness. And notice it will fit every age group. This is not just for 50 and older. And what they did, where's the ism in this?
Baptism.
Baptism.
Yeah, baptism. This is, and this is as a Christian, depending on how you define Christian, some would say, you know, baptism is something totally different. Lutherans take it from the perspective of God claiming us as God's own. And so in baptism, we become a new creation in Christ. And it changes from the word and responsible to the word response-able. As Lutherans would see this, baptism makes us able to respond differently than we would before. It's the power of the Holy Spirit working in us. And that's what we would call here the core. What drives me, what gives my life meaning, security, identity, is my baptism. Now, not the act of baptism, but it is the faith that God works in baptism that gives us the ability to respond differently. Now, if one is of a different faith tradition, you can put whatever from that faith tradition we call the core, and it would, you know, do the same thing, okay? So they divided this up. And these are not in any order. They're spokes of a wheel. The social, interpersonal well-being, emotional well-being, physical well-being, financial well-being, vocational well-being, and intellectual.
Technological.
Yes. What tested your faith? Well, the video machine. All right. Now, we're going to be working with that this week, because what I want us to do, oh, I can just see the evaluation forms now. He was brilliant, but can't do technology. Yeah, you got that right. All right. These are the definitions for these cores. Don't lose this if you're coming back, because what I'm going to have us do once we learn what each of these are is sit down, if you want to, and do a life assessment. For example, I can tell you now on the physical well-being, if I'm going to be able to walk again, I have to do what the physical therapy people tell me to do. And so that's what I do. So my goal is to be able to keep walking as long and as well as I possibly can. The other thing I would love to work on, if they weren't serving peach cobbler, is losing weight, you know, because I know that's what I need to do, especially to help with my foot. So these are goals that I set for myself based on this wholeness wellness wheel. Financial well-being, we have a sense of what that is. But I have a good friend who's always telling me, my financial planner tells me I've got to quit spending more money than I'm making. Really? What a concept. But it's stuff we have to deal with. Fixed income. Anybody on a fixed income?
Yeah, yeah. I guess so.
Yeah. You know, they talk about changing Medicare, and I go, could we talk about that? You know, because financially that has a strong impact. Vocational well-being. Now, that's not just, as you'll read in the definition, that's not just about your career. What's your vocation? I've learned that my vocation, no matter what I'm doing, I tend to work hard to empower people to be all that they are. Not that they can be, but what they are, okay? And so that becomes kind of a vocation for me. The social interpersonal, this is that loneliness factor. I don't tend to be lonely because I'm involved in so many things. But if there's days that I don't have things going on, I take my computer and work at a coffee shop just to be around people because that's important to me. But you see what I mean? I'm going to give you a thing to work on. In fact, I'll probably do that now. What am I doing well in this area? And what's a growth area for me? Now, some of you maybe have met Steve. I thought he was going to be here this morning. He's the one, if you came on Saturday, that rode his bike up the hill.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He said today he was going to go do it again, just to see if he could do it faster.
Right.
Well, I thought, okay. I said, have you had therapy lately? But he's going to do that. And I don't think he'll mind me saying this, so I thought, well, okay, he's probably 20 years younger than I am. No, he's a year older. I'm going, what's wrong with this picture? So I don't have a goal to be able to ride up that hill. But you see what I get at? Each of us has our different set of goals. And whatever it is, even if you've been sedentary for a long time, even to walk after I had my heart surgery, my goal was to walk out to the mailbox and back again. That's just what I had to learn how to do. And so whatever your goal is, wherever you've been, to set a realistic goal for how you can begin to live that out. And intellectual well-being. Folks, Dr. Phil and Ellen DeGeneres is not going to fill all of your intellectual needs. Okay? Now, they're entertaining, and once in a while, I enjoy watching that. But even in terms of memory care, we know learning something new helps develop synapses, which is going to help us continue to function longer. And so what is your intellectual thing? Reading, painting, writing. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it allows you to... So you get the idea as you're setting goals? Not what would make me happy, not what would make your kids happy, but what is going to fulfill you? The more we're living this out, the healthier we're going to be. Now, there are certain physical things over which we have no control. Tomorrow, or Wednesday, we're going to spend a lot of time on what is resilience? And what is adaptivity? Is that a word? Mm-hmm. It is now. We're going to talk about how important that is in the aging process. It's not a matter of losing things, it's doing them differently. And then Friday, we're going to pick up some pieces, but we're going to work on what St. Benedict talks about, let death ever be before you. And we're going to talk about the poem that says, a person who is afraid to die has never really lived. And what does that mean? So it gets uncomfortable in a way for some people, so I'm giving you a heads up. We're going to spend some time on that on Friday. The goal is wholeness, living life to the max, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, living it to the to who you are, where you are, and with fullness. Let me just stop and chat. What do you want to tell me? What do you want to tell each other? You're not going to miss lunch. The bell hasn't rung.
We should have been here for the whole week and not leaving on Tuesday.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Yeah.
But I have something.
Yes.
So many people say, well, I can't wait until I retire and do nothing.
Yeah, I know. That's a quick way to die. And it's kind of boring. Now, I will be one who says that I'm trying to have more time to just kind of sit. It's important to have time to sit under the banyan tree and think about life. Because one of the things that many seniors take on, and it's a very important thing to do developmentally, is memoirs, even if you never publish them. But to go back over your life, and there's some great books out there on how to do that. And you don't need a book, just do it your way. But to go back and look at your life, the fun thing to do is to come up with the chapter titles, you know, and then to write your stories. And I'm going to do possibly first 5 years, maybe first 10 years of my life. That's going to be my kids' Christmas present. I'm going to get it printed up and with pictures and give it to them for Christmas. But what it also does, the researchers, and I'm not doing a whole lot of academic stuff. If you want me to go through the researchers, I've got it, I can do it. But I wanted this to be more hands-on. But one of the end-of-life things is very important. Did my life make sense? Did I make a difference? What's my legacy? Now, some people want to, their legacy is to have a building named after them. I have a different view of my own legacy, but maybe what is your legacy? Maybe is to pass on. I'm kind of mad at my grandmother. She only gave my sister the recipe for the apple dumplings, and my sister died and didn't give any of us that. And I'm kind of mad at myself for never asking, because that's one of Grandma's legacies. Mm-hmm. Not just the actual eating of it, the smell of her kitchen, the time together. You know, what's your legacy? You have one. But to sit and reflect on your life and to look back, where did my life make a difference?
I think it's been a lot of fun. Spending time with my mom and dad at this stage of their lives, because they think a lot about those things.
Yeah.
And it's fun to hear the stories. It's fun to, you know, to learn about all the different things and the challenges and the people and all the connections that they made. And, you know, even just the really critical things that have happened, the severing of relationships that happened,
yeah. And
why. So I think that that's something that, it's their gift to their kids, but it's also they're going through and processing,
exactly.
Was my life important? What significance did it have?
And a lot of community ed programs have courses on doing exactly what you're talking about, mm-hmm. where they kind of teach you. Now, I had an experience, you know, Satan used scripture against me. You know, that happens. And being an egomaniac, as I have been over the years, when I went to retire the first time, the scripture that Satan kept giving me, and he knew not Joseph, when it talked about, you know, the Pharaoh remembering, you know, the history of the people of Israel, and he knew not Joseph. Nobody's going to know me anymore. I'm not going to get invited to speak anymore. I'm not that. That was a horrible time for me in retirement. Now, not so much. There's other passages Satan throws at me. But I mean, that's what begins to happen to us and to make sense of it. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, and yes. I think the important thing about those stories is don't wait for them to tell you or for them to write it down. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Ask. Yeah. Because you never know when that ability mm-hmm. will go away.
Right.
Well, and record. I did not record, or nor did I write down the stories. And I'm kicking myself because I thought, I'll never forget those. Oh, dear God. Yeah. Whoops. All right, you can call me anything, but don't call me late for dinner. Have a nice time, and hopefully we'll see you Wednesday, except for those of you leaving on Tuesday.
Yes.